Welcome to the Commonwealth Club. I'm George Hammond, chair of the Humanities Forum, which organized tonight's event. I'd like to welcome our live audience here in San Francisco and our radio and online audiences. And it's my great pleasure to introduce my friend Jojo Capice to speak about her third novel, Portofino Souvenir. Very brave attempt and a very wonderful pull-off of the Italian trilogy. Jojo Capice.
Thank you very much, George, and it's a pleasure to be back, my third time back at the Commonwealth Club, and I would like to say to everybody, buonasera e benvenuto, welcome. I want to take you to the cover of the book, which you see is enlarged here, and this is the beautiful piazza of Portofino. And the story, of course, revolves around this entire area, and we'll get into that in a moment. We were very lucky. My husband, Ed, grew up there, and his parents had a home right here. And looking on the internet one day by chance, we found an apartment here for rent each summer, which we did for 6 years, which was fabulous. So although this is fiction, there's a lot of fact in this true story of Francesca Augusta, the Countess, who was the heiress of the aeronautical fortune. All of us know about Augusta helicopters. If you've seen the James Bond recent movie, that was an Augusta helicopter, which is also McDonnell Douglas and Sikorsky. So this is a company that had many tentacles, including he became an arms dealer. I thought before we got into the book, because you look like such a fun audience, and my radio audience didn't know I was going to have a good time with this, we're going to give you a little Italian lesson. So here's the Italian that I want you to think about, because this is very much in the book. I haven't put in all the alphabet. But we go with A for amore. Can everybody say amore? Art, anni, which is age, and a lot of this book centers upon how a woman ages. And amici, we're all amici, we're friends. B is for baci, a kiss. It's also for bugia, which is a lie. Biglioni, because she was a billionaires. And bella for a woman, and bello for a man. You see, the Italian language is very simple. Then we come to C for cultura, culture, the culture of Italy, and commedia, because life is a comedy. Collusion, there's plenty of that everywhere, especially in Italy. Cafe and the Contessa. Going down to La Dolce Vita, dolce is the sweet life. For D, Da Vinci, which you all know how to say. Destino, and I think everybody has a destino, we don't know what it's going to be. And Disillusione. And this is what happens in my book. Because naturally, M is for matrimonio. You're always disillusioned when you get into a marriage. And this is marriage Italian style. Male fortuna, bad luck. Mafiosa, mafia. And mascara, the mask. We all wear a mask. And it's trying to penetrate that mask. And then we have a very famous one here, marito. It's a beautiful name. That's husband. Sounds very good. Musica, and let's hope it has music in that marito. P is for Portofino, paradiso, potere, power, and passione. Because with passione, you have sesso, and that's sex. Sopravvivere is a wonderful word. It means living above life, which we translate as surviving, to survive. And Svengali. There are some people in life that do have a Svengali power over you, and we're going to speak about that in the book. V is for Veni, Vidi Vinci. I came, I saw, I conquered. Vita, which is life. Verità, which is truth. Victima, which sadly, Francesca became a victim. And the last one, that marvelous Italian word, vendetta. Can everybody say that? Okay, so I hope you can hear me. This is based on a true story, and my other protagonist in the story is a woman named Victoria Simmons. And she begins the book because she's a reporter with CNN. CNN, breaking news, Portofino, Italian Riviera, January 9th, 2001. Victoria Simmons reporting. A flamboyant Italian countess has vanished from her hilltop villa in this posh Mediterranean resort last night, wearing only her robe and slippers. The tragedy was disclosed 8 hours after she went missing. Italian naval patrol, police, and search teams with dogs are combing the area. Coast Guard helicopters scan the coastline, and divers probe beneath the sea, searching for the billionaires. So take this, put it around again, and just imagine. Countess Francesca Augusta was last seen yesterday evening saying she was going for a swim. At 7 p.m. when she left her mansion Monday night. It is here in magnificently beautiful Portofino, the place where the aeronautical billionaire Count Augusta first set his eyes on the 19-year-old, raven-haired, 6-foot-tall Gucci model, Francesca. And it only takes one look, and his destiny was foretold. Portofino, a place once seen, remains an unforgettable memory. Its position between the Alpines and the Mediterranean Sea is the smallest municipality in the province of Genoa, 18 miles away. But it takes you 1 hour to go 18 miles away because of the mountains. 500 people inhabit the pedestrian village with its lollipop-colored houses framing the acclaimed harbor. Founded by the Romans in 2 AD, its original name was Portius Delphini due to a quantity of dolphins in the Triglio Gulf. Before Italy was united 153 years ago, Florence and Sardinia claimed Portofino as theirs due to its position and the largest concentration of floriculture in the Mediterranean. Today, like little toy police, the wonderful hamlet is monitored with the police in dapper uniforms, monitoring the only entry unless you climb over the mountain by foot, permitting a specified amount of strangers at a time to invade. They cannot come into the town if there are too many people, and the scenic paradise is one that people actually wait in line in their car to receive entree into the port of Portofino. But you can't take your car, so the cars are left and you go on foot. Mini trucks with supplies for boutiques and restaurants are allowed to enter the port at 6 a.m., and they must make a hasty farewell 2 hours later or permits are revoked. Ironically, and this is part of the mystery, the system for yachts is quite different. You do not need any documentation to enter or exit Portofino's beautiful port. So here it was when this magnificent model, who spoke 5 languages, captured the heart of Francesca. And Francesca was a very smart woman. And she knew to have a good husband was very nice, but to have a rich husband was even better. And she thought a woman needs 4 men in her life. The first man has to be wonderful in the living room. He's got to entertain you and your friends. You've got to learn something from this man. The second man you need is a man who's wonderful with the family, simpatico, as they say in Italian, who makes everything wonderful with the family. There's no domestic dispute. The third man a woman needs is a man who makes you fire in bed, someone who can electrify every pulse, every moment of your life. And, of course, the fourth man is the man who pays for it. So it's nice if you can find four in one. But actually, and I hope my radio audience will have a good time thinking about this, usually you find two. You're lucky if you find three, but finding four, you've hit the jackpot. So she hit the jackpot, and she was always astute. The dazzling redhead that turned every eye had brain cells that worked overtime when it came to money, no matter what pretense she made to be feminine. Educated into the banks that profited doing business with dictators, arms dealers who channeled motor bombs to child soldiers in Africa, bagmen for the third world dictators, traffickers in blood diamonds, and other international outlaws, the heads of state, the presidents of the United States of America, all used the helicopters and their arms, was territory she understood by her marriage to Count Augusta. This thicket touched her through the arms deals he made, the super-secret Swiss banking system, one that only one who plays this roulette game really knows well, was hers to master. Forget about the Panama Papers. There is so much more intrigue than that. Anyway, she was in her element and became a valuable source for her husband and for people around her husband's milieu who were, in fact, the Prime Minister of Italy at the time, Benito Craxi. But this was an amazing love story, a great love story. They traveled everywhere. They had incredible homes, fabulous villa in Cuernavaca, apartments in New York, Milano, everywhere you could think, jet planes, huge yachts. And that is the way they lived. It is important to understand in the world this year, today alone, $50 million worth of antiques, antiquarial, will change hands just in America. That seems very sort of, I think, low in the estimate. But that is what is known. $50 million worth of antiques change hands in America with the Mediterranean every single year. So here she was living, traveling first class. And traveling first class is as much of a drug as cocaine. No one ever wants to relinquish the premier tier of life. Life without money is really no life. Happiness is expensive. Money brings freedom and power. Powerful company, too. And there was the powerful company of the prime minister and others around her, all who wanted to court the jet-set company, the billionaires, the diva, the wonderful Francesca, while at the same time working a double agenda, and people wore their masks. To remain a VIP was of prime importance to Francesca, especially when, after 20 years, sad to say, the romance was over and the count walked away. True society shunned her, and a woman alone is a woman who is vulnerable. And in some cases, a woman alone can make the wrong alliances, and her sins, in this case, caught up with her. Because Francesca was getting older. She was now approaching 50. And when she was going for her coffee in the port of Portofino, she caught a sign, and the sign said this: a woman is like the world. At 20, she's like Africa, semi-explored. At 30, she's like India, warm, luxurious, mysterious. At 40, she's America, technically perfect. At 50, she's like Europe, all in ruins. And at 60, she's Siberia. Everyone knows where it is, but nobody wants to go there. So age became a pretty important thing with Francesca. And at this point, being so rich, being still a very sexy woman, a mascalzone walked into her life. This is Italian for a very naughty boy. He was so naughty. He was laundering money, laundering art, stamps, gems. And she was alone, and she was a cougar. She had power over a young man. And this is interesting because at one point, age and relationships are so important. When a man has a younger wife, he's saying to the world, wow, I can still do it. That was Corrado Augusta. When a woman has a younger man, she can flaunt the same thing. But there are always repercussions, of course. So what happened? From high society in the trendiest places in the world, the remarkable beauty, Francesca, made history worldwide, first by her marriage, and then once separated, and later as a widow, because they never divorced, she became a widow, during investigations by an Italian judge who caught her out because he wanted to prosecute her. He was sure she was laundering money. And this was because Prime Minister Craxi said he never owned anything, while at the same time he had his foreign treasures laundered by his friend Francesca Augusta and Maurizio, her lover, his longtime lackey. So the world fell apart because at that point, she who thought she was having this young lover as a true beau, it was discovered that he hid $20 million in her lockbox, which was Craxi money. And when the judge opened that lockbox, she was absolutely guilty. Facts state Francesca Augusta played a role in the passage of funds and bargained a year and 2 months in prison with house arrest instead. They flew to Cuernavaca. They were extradited back to Italy. And after a few days in jail in Italy, Francesca, who arrived there with a plethora of Gucci luggage and beautiful linens, spent the rest of that summer and those years under house arrest at Villa Altachiara. Villa Altachiara was originally built in 1874 by Lord Carnarvon, whose son and wife bankrolled the Egyptologist Howard Carter when he went to discover the tomb of Tutankhamun. And the house has always had a curse on it. They called it the mummy's curse because of the fact that Carnarvon died then. Now, the name Altachiara means high clear in Italian. It is the exact same name as his castle in England, High Clear Castle, that all of us have seen on Downton Abbey. So this is an interesting family history. And, of course, some of my book does detail the Carnarvon's falling in love, building that house, and what went on at that house. Their different murders and sinister endings. So there was Francesca living in Villa Altachiara. But what happened, she was living with a bodyguard. And the bodyguard was quite handsome, a Mexican gentleman, who spoke several languages, who had been a security private detective and was detailed to Francesca to protect her while she was having house arrest. But he took his job seriously, and he became not only a bodyguard, but he became her lover. In the meantime, she was traumatized by shame, smoldering fear, anger, and age, and her life changed dramatically. Yet this man was very kind to her and didn't expect anything from it, but the relationship grew. However, that shameless Maurizio, he went to jail in Mexico over 3 years. He had so many secret funds at his disposal from questionable sources, and his credo, money can buy everyone. He greased the palms, maybe like El Chapo, and persuaded the Mexican authorities to have an annex of the prison near his domain and build a tennis court there where he could take tennis lessons while he was incarcerated and also have his beautiful Mexican Chiquita come, who was 20 years old, and visit him. So that will give you a little flavor about this Mascalzone naughty boy and what happened. He then went on to marry her, and what happened, which they never expected, from that part of his life, he went back and settled in all places, Miami, Florida. Now, with all due respect to Miami, Florida people, we know there's a little bit of mafiosa going on over there. I think mafiosa is everywhere, but nevertheless, it's very interesting that that's where he was at the time when it was said that Francesca took this plunge. But after all this, before this fateful night, Francesca added up the score of her life. She had this sweet man doing everything for her, living with her under house arrest, and the village loved him, still does to this day. And unbeknownst to him, she went to her lawyer and she made her will. She liked to make wills, but this was her last will and testament. But she was then only 58 years old, still very beautiful, and thinking she was going to marry this man when they were able to leave Italy and go to Mexico where they wanted to marry. So unbeknownst to him, she writes her will, leaving everything to Tirso Cesaro. And, of course, the Mascalzone Maurizio in Mexico and in Florida with his Chiquita thinks that everything's going to be left to him from the good old days. And suddenly she vanishes. Maurizio flies back, says he's in charge of the entire investigation, pushes Tirso aside, and no one can find her. And after 3 weeks, the magnificent body, her cadaver, gruesomely appeared, washed up on an obscure beach in another country, as an unknown corpse, completely nude, unrecognizable, gnawed by gluttonous fish with a blow to her head. This opened a murder inquiry in France on the basis of an autopsy that suggested the corpse was dead before she entered French waters, and she was not in the water 3 weeks. Authorities there considered her an unknown citizen of their country, and they were ready to dispose of her remains in an unknown grave. This is where Victoria Simmons, the reporter, is riveted to the story, because she just knows bodies just don't wash up on beaches every day. The corpse had 3 wounds, one on the back of her head that appeared to have been inflicted by a blunt instrument, and there were no signs of any scrapes, any tears on her skin from a huge fall of the magnitude of Alta Chiara, if she had in fact cascaded down a jagged cliff, as reported by the famous Maurizio. The French authorities never would have known who she was, but they did notice that her dental work was the kind of dental work that only very wealthy people could afford. However, there she was in the morgue, until suddenly the French authorities received an anonymous, mysterious phone call alerting them, the body in the morgue is the body of Francesca Augusta, the Countess, the billionaires. Forensic scientists examining this body knew she was not in the water 3 weeks, otherwise the fishes would have had much more of a feast. How could she have floated from Portofino to this faraway little village near the southeast corner of Toulon, 238 miles away? It is the distance between Washington, D.C. and New York City. So finally, because she is dead, the will is read, and all hell breaks loose. Maurizio is in shock and claims it's all his. To this day, he claims that. And tragically, Tirso, in bereavement, is forced to sign a document agreeing to take $5 million, get out of Italy, stay out of Italy, and never show his face and give up the entire fortune. He was so afraid for his life, knowing the underworld was involved, he left for America and he lives in Houston, Texas. Today he is married to a very nice girl and he has suffered cancer, but he's fine. Maurizio, as I speak, still claims all is his. He has taken possession of the magnificent Villa Altachiara, which is worth 43 million euro. It is still not validly sold, although there have been sales and sale rumors coming and going. And on top of everything else, all of Francesca's magnificent jewelry, valued at something like $50 million, has suddenly disappeared. Now, our wonderful Victoria Simmons is so in shock from writing this. At that point, she meets a banker who is investigating Francesca for confiscated art and for confiscated gems and stamps, because stamps, the easiest thing in the world to trade. You can walk through any airport. Nobody knows if you've got stamps on you, and stamps can be worth a fortune. And this banker and Victoria scour the facts, many more facts than this in the book, and eventually they fall in love. A beautiful love story. Many wonderful people are depicted in the book, including Gianni Agnelli, the famous playboy, who was a friend of the Augustas. And at the end, there's a big surprise trick ending, and I'm going to leave you now to say, if you want to learn more about confiscated art, the collusion of all this, money laundering, and the curse, the horrible curse of Villa Altachiara, please read my book, and thank you so much for coming tonight. Grazie tanti. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I wish I could give you all a free ticket to Portofino.
Well, as long as we get to stay in the Villa Altachiara. I'd just like to remind our radio and online audiences that they're listening to Jojo Capi speaking about her novel, her third novel, Portofino Souvenir. And it's time for questions. Anybody have any questions for Jojo?
Don't be shy.
I have. I'll get started.
Start with the question.
Yeah. So which character did you identify more with, the reporter or with Francesca?
Well, I think every single woman who will be either reading my book or going through life would certainly identify with both of them, because Victoria is a widow. She's a young widow, and she had not gotten the chance she got at CNN. That's why she wants to become an author, and that's one of the reasons why she believes in this case. And so I love that, because she really was down on her luck, and she took her life and said, I'm not gonna fail. I'm going to become an author, and I'm going to work, and she went back to Italy and did that. And so she's young. She's 40. But Francesca is somebody that I think every woman will also understand. And both girls fall in love in the book. And I think that the magic of love coming into your life, the challenges that Francesca faced when her husband was no longer her benefactor and her heart and soul, and the marriage came to an abrupt end after 20 years. And I think that this is one of the things that I just was recently very happy to have an article in Italo Americano, the newspaper, because a beautiful woman and a beautiful woman alone can very much be underestimated. And I think that a lot of women are underestimated in life, and I'm very proud of the wonderful things that women are doing today to achieve what they wish to achieve. And this is a current story. I mean, this story is still going on. So she, of course, died. But I really identified with both of them. And one of the things that I really felt, and I think Victoria feels that, no woman should die that way. I don't care what you did. I mean, I don't care if she, and she wasn't the world's most awful person. No woman deserves to die like that. She died a horrible, horrible death, being eaten up by sea life after being, you know, bludgeoned to death in a way. So both of those women, and also there's another woman in the book, Silvana, And Silvana tells a very interesting story because she is the catalyst that is involved in confiscated art. And she tells a story about the great masterpieces that we've gotten word of today, certainly so many confiscated with World War II, because right alongside Portofino, around this, you see the cover, around this promontory is a tiny little village which is written in the book called San Frutoso. And you cannot reach San Frutoso except by boat or by foot. And believe you me, you'd have to be very young like this man in the back of the room who'd be able to reach it by foot because it's rugged terrain. And that is a very old monastery. And today you can go and have a good spaghetti alla vongole there. But it is a very hidden away place. And if her body was supposed to have floated, that was natural, it would have floated that way. But what happened is that that was a very good post to hide confiscated art in World War II.
Yeah, when I read it, I thought that for sure that you identified with both. So I'm
happy. Oh, good. Okay, great. The bad girl and the good girl.
Yeah.
Who would murder her? Or is there any?
Well, I don't want to spoil the book.
Oh, okay.
But I will tell you, I think the last couple of chapters will keep you riveted.
Okay. Well, I was on a cruise with my boyfriend last year, and we could go off, but it was rough. So I decided that I wasn't going to go in the little boat. So Tom went and took pictures. Now I'm sorry I didn't go off on the boat.
Well, Villa Alta Chiara is the highest point that you can hardly see it on this in particular. It's hidden away in the shrubbery. Behind the top post, it's looking down. Instead of looking at the port, it looks over the... It has a whole, complete radius of everything. But it looks mostly over the Mediterranean, which is gorgeous.
I have a question about the title. Souvenir, maybe my limited knowledge of it, kind of strikes me as something like a Barry Bonds bobblehead doll or something like that.
Oh, really?
You get at the ball game.
Well, so. Souvenir is a memory. Like my souvenirs are when I was a young bride with my husband. Okay. That's a souvenir.
And another question is... some years ago, all novels, well, I won't say all novels, but quite a few of the novels would always have this disclaimers in it saying, any similarity to living characters is purely coincidental. So what has changed?
So what do I say? I'll tell you what I say. And this would be fun, because a writer has to do that, because otherwise, uh-oh. This book, because remember I bring up Lord Carnarvon, so that we're really going back. This book spans 120 years of true events. Apart from historical references, names, characters, and incidents, this work of fiction mirrors the author's imagination. I will say this. To my great surprise, after the book was published, one day I opened my internet communication box, and my gosh, I got a letter from Rocky Agusta, who is, of course, very much portrayed in this book. His father was Count Agusta. So, and he said, you really, truly did Francesca a service. So I won't go into any more of that. But, you have to say that. Otherwise, you can have, it's interesting. This country is very interesting. You have to say that in a book. Yet, we don't have the libel laws that they have in England. And just with this election, they can't say those things that are being said here in this country of whatever candidate. And so it is interesting, but with an author, you've got to make a disclaimer like that. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
One of the things that struck me about your... Okay.
You know? Oh, that's fine, George. Go ahead. Oh, thank you. You finished your presentation using the word love quite a bit. Tell me, in the total perspective of the book, is it infatuation or a power trip or something in between? How would you define it?
Well, I think you seem like a man who's been there maybe a time or two. So I think every love story begins with an infatuation. And you can't make that happen. It happens with a look. You know, I'm speaking of the real kind of love stories. Sure, you can be a devil like Maurizio and look for your own agenda. But I think a real love story, which the Count had with her and she had with him, was an infatuation, a lust, a fabulous thrill. And then it grows. I mean, their marriage grew, and sadly, it didn't grow for the older years together, which I speak about in the book, Why. But I think that, yes, there is a lot of love, and love makes the world go round. And there's love and there's hate. And there's Svengali, because I know from a woman's perspective, a man can have such power over a woman as he had over her, Count Augusta, and then Maurizio had over her. But, of course, a woman has to give that to the man. Now, I know that the reverse is true. A man can be very strong and can get involved with a woman he really doesn't realize is pulling a Svengali on him. So I think it goes both ways. Have I answered your question?
Sure.
Thank you.
The other thing that struck me was how, although this was taking place right now, you know, late 20th century, early 21st century, sounded like it was the 17th century in Europe. I mean, with noble families and stolen wealth and stolen art and trying to keep up appearances when appearances were falling apart, et cetera, et cetera. I just watched the movie Barry Lyndon again after 40 years with Stanley Kubrick's thing, and it just reminded me of your story.
Well, it's also very interesting. You have to think about this. Telephone records, emails, texts, nothing is recorded. Isn't that interesting?
Not recorded, but it's all digitally discoverable.
Right. It's not, nobody knew who called the morgue. That's French and Italian, both naughty on that. Nobody had checked cell phones, who called what, who texted whom. So that, of course, I've lived in Italy over 23 years, so that doesn't surprise me. But, of course, the way Italy goes, so does the world. I mean, it used to say when America sneezes, the world gets a cold. But I think that you go back to the Caesars. I mean, there's always collusion. I used to think America was absolutely squeaky clean. I grew up.
Yeah, it's all relative. You know, as I say, you can get by if 10% of the people are cheating on their taxes, but when 70% of the people cheat on their taxes, the government has trouble.
Of course, the Italians always cheat on the taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Your time there. Can you tell us a little bit about the 6 summers that you spent? This is what a
many more than
place.
6 summers. My first trip to Portofino, I hate to tell you how many years ago it was. My little daughter was 13. She is now a mother. I'm a grandmother because of her, and she said, "Mommy, I have my first trip to Europe. I've chosen my cities." And she chose Florence, and she did choose Portofino in London. And so that's the first time I ever saw Portofino. Although I had a client in Portofino, because I once had a public relations company, and the client was the Splendido Hotel, which is the best hotel, not because it was my client, up on the hillside, where, of course, everybody goes if you're going for a posh drink. You have to get off the boat next time so your boyfriend can take you. And the Splendido were very, very helpful to me throughout this investigation of the book, and were very interested because the Count and the Countess used to go there and dine. And also, later years, she would once in a while be seen with Maurizio. So that was my first experience. And many years later, 23 years after I lived in Europe, I came back to the city and re-met my husband, who's sitting here tonight. And Ed grew up in Portofino as a little lad. He was 7, 8 years old. And he would go off with the fishermen all by himself to San Frutoso. And those were the days when nobody worried about their children being you know, shipped off with people they didn't know. And he'd come back, and they were trying to make a Catholic out of him, and his parents were atheists. But they managed to get this little boy to have the joy to carry the flag of the Catholic Church with the Virgin on it for the Easter parade, and his parents were sitting on the balcony, this is 90 years ago, and having their martinis and their cigarettes, saw this little boy carrying the cross of Jesus and flags and everything of Mary, and they almost died because they were trying to teach him to be an atheist. So that is very amusing, and that's one of the reasons why then I also went back with my other close people in my life, but then with Ed, and we went back six simultaneous years, which was great because Victoria Simmons came alive, the girl from CNN, and some of these characters that I really, truly got to know.
How much research, you know, that Victoria did in the novel that you did? Did you just get the story
this book took me all on and off about 11 years to write.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so noir. I mean, it was so noir that my husband used to say, come to bed. And I said, I can't come to bed. And then I'd come to bed shaking because of getting these mysterious facts about Francesca. And I had the pleasure to know her. And really, it was true. She would walk in a room and both men and women, their heads would turn. She was a knockout, drop-dead, gorgeous beauty. Drop-dead, I said, but it's interesting. Yeah, that's how it goes.
All right.
But I think that's... Any more questions?
Yeah? Any other questions?
Okay. I'm confused. Does the book reveal, do they know now who has killed her?
Well, I said you'd have to read the book.
Yeah, you did say that.
I'm not going to give that away, but I will tell you...
The answer's in the book.
But I will tell you very, very interestingly that to this day... I was very, very pleased. The attorney of 11 years for Francesca wanted to read the book. I did speak to a number of her lawyers, including the man who wrote her last will and testament. And he's an American. And you'll read about him a little bit in my book. And he read the book, and then he put a very wonderful critique into my publisher, and we put it on the back page of the book itself. But the actual story of the villa is still in question, and also the life, which I don't want to give that away. Yes, sir?
Where do you live now?
Well, I don't live in Portofino because I'm not exactly...
Then I would ask, why not?
Well, it's very interesting because... this year, I will not go back. I don't want to...
this is an exception.
Absolutely. And I don't want to, let me put it this way, endanger myself. I remember my first book was All Roads Lead to Rome, which spoke about the corruption under Berlusconi. And when I was giving a book party in London, a person put their hand up and they said, Jojo, aren't you afraid to give a book party in Rome? And I said, well, I think it would be pretty exciting to have an obituary that would say, died by a mafia hit squad. That's better than saying, you know, she choked on a, you know, her saliva or something like that. So, no, I'm not going back, but I have the pleasure to go to a family wedding in Florence, so we shall see what happens. How many of you have been to Italy in the room? Okay, we got one who has to go. I see it over here. I wish you well. It's a magnificent country. I love it very much, and with all its flaws and its beauty. And I've been privileged to have so many years there. Thank you so much. Grazie tante.
And so ends another event at the Commonwealth Club in its 114th year of enlightened discussion. Thank you very much for coming.